Bonjour et bienvenue dans ce nouvel épisode de fin de séance. C'est Areski Sugar qui vous parle. Pour vous dire que je suis en spectacle actuellement au Théâtre Beau-Saint-Martin à Paris. Donc si vous voulez venir voir une superbe heure de stand-up, n'hésitez pas à prendre vos places. Il reste des places pour les trois dernières représentations de la saison. Le 15 juin, 28 juin et 12 juillet. N'hésitez pas à aller sur Bireduc ou suivre les liens depuis la description du podcast ou aller sur sugarfree.com. Merci à tous. Profitez bien de cet épisode. Bisous. Welcome everyone to the 60th episode of Fin de Séance, the only French movie podcast with English episodes. Well, this one is about the movie Okja. We've recorded this a little more than a week ago with Charlotte and Arnaud. Yes, I know I'm a little bit late for the editing and the recording of this intro, but I have a good reason for that. I am on holidays, all right? So right now I'm using my beach time for this podcast and for you, so be thankful for that. Let's not forget to subscribe to Fin de Séance on iTunes, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and follow us on the Facebook page. So that's at Fin de Séance. Don't worry about the spelling. I mean, if you're hearing this, just copy and paste the Fin de Séance thing. I'm sure you'll be okay. Kisses and hugs to every one of you, and enjoy this episode. So you saw Baby Driver, Edgar yes. Wright's Baby Driver.
Yeah, and I liked it a lot. I thought, you know, I really had no complaints. The script was good. All of the performances were great. Ansel Elgort, I think his name is, the lead, was fantastic. And I read he had gone to the School of American Ballet. His dancing was, like, amazing. The music was phenomenal. It was really just like a fun action movie. I found that when I got into my dad's car afterwards, I was driving like significantly more recklessly. I was weaving down the streets of Glens Falls, New York.
I can do anything I want.
but it actually, there was like a lag in the time that it took me to realize how badly I was driving. I was like zip, 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 zip. And then I was like, this is probably, like, not a great influence on me.
Never watch Elephant by Gus Van Sant, Charlotte, please.
I didn't shoot up a school, though. So, I don't know. I'm easily swayed, but not...
Not that much.
Not towards things that I wouldn't naturally do. I, like, naturally have a lead foot.
So you're a reckless driver, naturally.
Yeah, like I look down at the speedometer, and this, you know, may or may not mean anything to you, and I'll be like going 90 miles an hour and be like, oh, I should probably slow down.
I think we can say we are definitely fans of Edgar Wright's, right, Arno?
I am.
What else did he do?
His Cornetto trilogy, Scott Pilgrim, everything.
Oh, he's Scott Pilgrim. Well, that explains it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite one is Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz? Oh, whoa. Dang, okay. Yeah, I love stylized movies, and it was like just enough stylization.
Was the Bad Boys 2 of comedy, and for me, I would go classic with Shaun of the Dead. I think that was the great thing. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the TV show Spaced?
Yeah,
it was like in the late 90s, I think. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
totally watchable right now. It's so fun to have some TV shows like this. Two seasons, I think. He kind of paved everything we can see later in his movies. That's pretty awesome. I just threw up a little bit in front of the beginning of 50 Shades Darker, but I cut it short.
You had it coming, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw Wonder Woman. Do you guys have Wonder Woman yet?
We talked about it in a few weeks ago.
Oh, right. Okay.
What did you think of Wonder Woman?
I think that Zack Snyder should not be allowed in the entertainment industry. I thought it was so poorly written, it was offensive.
Okay, so we
are we on,
we're
the, same,
on the same page? I think.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, there were like some good moments. There was some like good comedy, and I thought that like Chris Pine's like whole like men are idiots joke was like pretty funny.
He was a smart comedy relief trope in the movie, but other than that, yeah, we kind of poked a lot of holes in the script when we talked about it.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty bad, but everyone loves it, and it kills me.
Yeah,
yeah, I know it's we talked about it, and it's really strange because. Why?
People I respect.
It's not. Why? It's not terrible, you know. It's not the worst film in the history of
it's
the world. But
for 2.5 hours
with the crew, except for Chris Pine. You know, there are three other people doing nothing around. There is a crew with a Moroccan, a Scottish guy, and a Native American.
And they don't do anything.
They don't do anything, mm-hmm. and they take maybe half an hour of the film doing nothing. Uh-huh. Just, you know, being around doing nothing.
Well, that's not true. They have a lovely party in a French village or Belgian village. But that's
don't all. They? I mean, I love it when people stop Nazis.
Yeah, like, in the First World War, they stop Nazis. That's the awesome thing in this movie.
Oh my God! Wait, it was World War One.
Yeah,
it was.
Oh.
Yeah, is that? That's exactly my point. It's they shot it like it was the Second World War.
No, I just learned that in the beginning they wanted to do the film during World War II, but then they decided that they would shoot it during World War I because of Captain America to not look like exactly like
that's...
Captain like Captain America.
I have a message for Zack Snyder. Delete your account.
The critics, everyone was really fan of this movie, and they said, wow, that's the best DC movie since the Nolan ones, and that's just a testament for the ridiculousness of the other DC movies, because if you think about this...
Yeah, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
It's better than Suicide Squad or Batman versus Superman. So
you do not have to compare your movie with Suicide Squad, because...
It's barely a movie.
It's barely a movie. It's like an MTV clip or something.
Yeah, it's a very long advertisement.
I wanted briefly to talk about The Care Confidential.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know if it was released in the US. It's an Egyptian film, thriller, and it takes place in 2011, just before the Arab Spring.
Oh, cool.
And it's about police corruption and state-wise corruption in the Egyptian society. And it's really, really interesting. It's I never saw corruption running so deep inside a society. Mm-hmm. It's almost funny at times. There is a scene in the film where the uncle of the hero, who is a policeman, he lets a murderer go away, and so the hero say to him, "Why do you do that?" The uncle said, no, don't worry, give us a suitcase full of money, so there is no problem. It's really an interesting film. I think it's worth watching.
I think it reminds me of Graduation, Baccalaureate, you know, on the Romanian side. You can see the corruption so deep inside everyone's mind that sometimes people want to fight against corruption by corruption, and they don't even realize it.
But the interesting thing about The Care Confidential is that the hero is as corrupt as everyone else. He tries, you know, to stop it, but he can't because he is part of it as well.
Who's the director?
Tariq Saleh. I know he did two or three films before that, and this one, I think it won a prize in Sundance last year.
I just know the Lebanese actor Fares Fares,
who
was in the Tyrant TV show. I don't know if you know this one. It's on FX. Well, it's been cancelled now after the third season, but it was a pretty good TV show about a fake country where someone wants to uphold democracy.
And you know, it's really
God forbid.
At the end of the film, it takes place during the uprising on Tahrir Place, and it sums up really the thing about corruption. It's people high in the administration will still have their places, but the hero who doesn't want to be part of this gets beaten up by the mob.
So it's pretty dark.
It's pretty dark, yeah.
I'm hoping you're not spoiling us everything in this movie.
No.
There's more.
No, I talk just about corruption, but you know there is a real...
investigation.
Investigation about a murder case that is quite interesting. I would say that I think the film is quite well written. I'm more hesitant about the direction of the film, because to take another thriller talking about its society, it reminded me of Black Coal, Sea Knife. I don't know if you
what have is
seen
that?
This
Black
film.
Hole?
Black Coal, Thin Ice by Diao Yinan, Chinese film about a policeman trying to uncover the identity of a serial killer. Through that, he was trying to expose the Chinese modern society. And it was really interesting, but it was really, really better directed than The Care Confidential. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Any other movies perhaps you want to talk about, Charlotte?
I tend to actually watch a lot more like television than I do movies.
I do the same.
Have you guys watched any of The Handmaid's Tale?
Yes. We come to my place every week to watch one TV show, and now we just finished The Leftovers, so we had to find another TV show. So we had a pilot evening. So we watched the pilot of The Handmaid's Tale, The Night Of, and Animal Kingdom. So we...
Oh, cool.
We decided we had to finish The Night Of first, but then it will be The Handmaid's Tale. But the pilot was... kind of amazing, yeah. The actress, I don't know her name, Peggy,
Elizabeth
you know,
Moss?
In Mad Men. Yeah, Elizabeth Moss. It was awesome.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
Have you seen Top of the Lake?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my favorite TV show the last 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm not finished with it, but, you know, I remember picking up the book in, like, either high school or college and thinking, the symbolism is ham-handed, like, and you know, immediately stopping and, you know, bullshitting my way through whatever class it was for. But like I need to go back, like I should go back and revisit it anyway, but either, you know, like I was just like young and foolish, or you know, it really translates well to film. But I think the series is so good.
Was already renewed, I think, just after three episodes or something like that.
Don't know how that's possible. Like, didn't they finish the story?
Yeah, they're supposed to finish the book in the first season, but then I guess the other seasons will be creative writing from the writers. So I don't know. That I really like the post-apocalyptic vibe you get from the pilot and the things. I guess there would be more to explore. I've read the book, but I don't know if they will change some things in the season from now. Like I said, I've only seen one episode, but
well, I mean, this is definitely rehashing stuff that people have already said about it. But like, it's especially in the flashbacks, it's just like now, like normal life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and especially like here in the States, it's kind of uncomfortably close, but it's like it's so well done. It's so well done, and the like is so aesthetic and like.
Well, what I've been told, it feels like the change of the government is too quick to be believable, but the more you go, the more you kind of think, well, it could.
Who says that?
Go sideways.
Maybe people who don't live here, because I don't know, man. Like,
yeah, that's right.
It really, like, it's totally believable. It's totally believable.
That's the thing. Now that Trump is the president, have you seen that he told his daughter to take a seat at the G20 meeting? Like, I'm supposed to go somewhere else, just take my seat. Like,
can you just go? Yeah.
It's royalty. It's pure role.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It's unbelievable.
I can't go, but my yoga teacher will attend.
My hot daughter.
So I guess, you know, The Handmaid's Tale could happen. Perhaps. You don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, like, a year ago it might have been, like, far-fetched. But now it really is just like, well... how many cans of Spam do I have in the bunker?
Could this be the start of some kind of wave in the movies and TV that will be extremely political or more political?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I think you already see that.
During production of what we can see now, Trump wasn't really, you know, supposed to be president. Like I've seen the fifth season of House of Cards, and it's like, oh no, the reality is definitely bigger than this. I'm not spoiling, but I'm just saying that it could be a shift in some of the TV shows and or movies, don't you think?
Totally. I think it is already happening. Mm. I don't remember where I heard this, but I do remember hearing that, and I'm just going to tell you some, like, totally uncitable stuff source from the internet.
Yeah. Like, according to an article
like, the U.S. Yeah, according to an article that I don't remember that someone told me about.
That was on Tumblr.
The country, like the U.S. is, like, more divided, or is more divided than any time in its history since, or, like, apart from the Civil War. I really think that they should just secede, the people who aren't, you know, pro human rights and like equality. Like, they should just, like, you guys can have Texas. Florida, Texas. You guys can have them. Secede. Do your own thing. Make your own bed.
Texas could actually just live by itself. It's a very rich state.
I support them. Yeah. Or that, or California should secede and, like, liberal, reasonable minded people should just move there. I don't know, man. It's like,
it's kind of already the case, right?
Yeah.
With Hollywood. No, nothing to add on that, Arnaud? On the political minds of American writers and what they could do from now on?
I see it brewing on your face.
I know it's a real question. How political can you get in a movie or in a TV show? And I think that fiction has a role in this kind of conversation, mm-hmm. but the danger for the work of fiction is to be too close to the political debate right mm-hmm. now, because the question happening in the political debate right now, they will be valid for a year, maybe 2 years, yeah. You know, something like that. And if the film is too close to that and doesn't try, you know, to reveal something greater about, you know, the human mind or about the human being, I think it will be a film that you throw away after a year or two.
Yeah, definitely. The bad thing would be a movie that's too topical, I guess. That's
It's also you limit your reach, I guess, too, when you're really topical. Because, like, I think the point, I think this is, like, probably a really great segue. Like, the point of, like, good sci-fi and good allegories is to, like, is to use a metaphor for something that you might not be able to access otherwise. You know, for a truth mm-hmm. that you might not be able to.
And
which is what Okja does really, really well. Right? See how I did that?
You will do all the transitions for now. Yeah,
so let me present to you the movie Okja. So a movie by Bong Joon-ho, who directed Memories of Murder and The Host. Meet Mija, a young girl who risks everything to prevent a powerful multinational company from kidnapping her best friend, a fascinating animal named Okja. Let's listen to a little clip.
We needed a miracle. And then we got one. This beautiful and special little creature will be a revolution in the livestock industry. Our super pigs will not only be big and beautiful, they will also leave a minimal footprint on the environment, consume less feed, and produce less excretions. And most importantly, they need to taste fucking good.
And now we can talk about Okja. Charlotte, what did you think about the movie?
I loved it. I watched it with my mom and we cried in my parents' basement. We cried together. And she decided to stop eating pork the next day.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
So finally she kind of joined you in the vegan diet?
Oh, I'm not vegan. I'm like mostly vegetarian, and like I know that my like...
Wait. She stopped eating pork.
Just pork.
But
beef. It's okay.
Yeah.
You're Jewish, right?
She's not Jewish. I'm Jewish on the wrong side.
Oh, all right.
I'm Jewish.
Ah, okay.
There's a dash between.
I identify as Jewish, though, because, yeah, you know, why not? Diaspora. It's beautiful.
So the movie kind of helped someone become, not a full vegetarian, but no bacon anymore then.
Well, like, for me, my ethical dilemma was, like, I couldn't eat meat and think of it as an animal. You know, and so I was like, I know I'm going to eventually have to, like, confront that, it just doesn't line up. So I think she's, like, one step closer to, you know, I love animals. My mother loves animals. My father loves animals. And, like, I think at a certain point, if you love animals, you do have to kind of reconcile those things.
Yeah. Or at least ask yourself the question.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And
not elude it completely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, like, a very thinly veiled metaphor, but just, like, so well done. And I was saying, earlier I went on this, like, Bong Joon-ho binge after that, and I watched The Host and I watched Mother, and, like, Mother seems like maybe an outlier in his canon, or correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, the Host.
No, he has two sides to his filmography, and Mother is tied to Memories of Murder, which is one of his first films and is a masterpiece. Mm. And then there is the goofy, allegorical, whimsical film like The Host or Ogja.
Yeah, and especially in The Host, like, there were so many parallels of, like, you know, like the little girl fighting against all odds and, like, I don't know, dad's doing wrong things and you know, the marriage of humor and action and whimsy and klezmer music. he loves klezmer, speaking of Jews. but I loved it.
In Korea, there's definitely that game of changing tone in the movies, and we've talked about it lately with The Strangers, and what have we seen?
What's The Strangers?
Oh, that's an awesome horror movie. You have to see it. It's cool. It's great. Yeah, the name is The Strangers 2 in English, right?
Yeah, I think so.
They translated to The Strangers, even in French, so...
Les Strangers.
Strangers. But Les Strangers. That's really a great, great movie, yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. About an exorcism, but in Korea, and you can see every culture they have, so it's pretty good.
And mixing shamanism and Catholicism.
Wait. You're not talking about The Wailing, are you?
Oh, The Wailing. That's right.
The Wailing. I saw The Wailing.
That's the American title.
The little girl
title.
who gets possessed, and the Japanese guy who lives in the hills.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really like The Wailing.
So I guess no. The Strangers was the title in France.
The French title.
Yeah.
So why give it an English? I don't know.
We translate a Korean Korean title with an English title that has nothing to do with it.
There's no English or American actor in the movies. I don't know who takes those kind of decisions.
No. The stranger in the film is the Japanese guy living in the mountain.
Yeah. Why not give it a Japanese?
Which they just, like, turn it and they turn it and they turn it again. And I was like, even at the end of that movie, I was like, what the fuck just happened? I liked it, but I was really confused, you know?
It begins like a parody and it ends like a fucking horrendous film.
Oh yeah, the ending was weird, questionable.
Inside the movie, and for people who are accustomed to Korean movies, there's always this shifting in tones, and you can kind of see it in Ogja. Sometimes it's, like, really violent, and sometimes it's supposed to be comical.
Well, I think what he hits on in both The Host and Ogja are, like, I love things that are you know, both, like, gleeful and cute and, like, kind of brutal, you know, or strange or, like, off-putting or, like grotesque. You know, I like the marriage of those two things, and I think that, like, humor is a really good like, connector of those.
Definitely.
Style is a really good way to connect those things.
And the thing is, I think it's the thing with Ogja as well. In the design, it's not the cutest creature you've seen. It's about,
no, they
you
show
know,
like
how...
a realistic anus.
I think what's interesting is that it's the same thing with the host, that the monster is not in the host, you know, responsible for all the things he does. It's not the the real monster in the host. It's the people mm-hmm. who created it. The army who tried
to capture it.
It's really interesting. It's not simple. It seemed like simple film, you know, really with a lot of humor. And I think it's smarter than that. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see your point, and I definitely agree for the host. But I'm going to be the Debbie Downer of today because
you hated Okja.
I hated it. I tried
why?
To. I didn't believe anything in the stories and the characters. It was supposed to be some kind of live-action Miyazaki movie. So when you see Jake Gyllenhaal perform, you're thinking, this guy is an anime.
I thought he was great, though.
I have nothing to say about his performance. I think Nicolas Cage did say
no!
No, I mean this in a very good way, by the way. When I say an actor is Nicolas Caging something, he's awesome.
That means it's
But...
Great.
the performance was great, but for example, for this one, for Jake Gyllenhaal, he had nothing really funny to say. And that's my... thing for all this movie, I'm sorry, but it's not subtle. It didn't grasp me emotionally at the beginning. I mean, I liked the countryside thing with Mija and Okja at the beginning, but when you kind of see the animal liberal front that's mm-hmm. supposed to help Mija, etc., I was really bored because nothing really happens except some kind of chase for an hour, and then you get finally to the point. And there's something I really like, though. It was the ending. We'll get to that in mm-hmm. the spoiler. When I saw it a little bit coming, and we were several to watch the Netflix movie, and I said, if this happens, okay, it will redeem the movie. And it kind of happened. Okay, it's really cryptic what I'm saying, but
I've seen it.
I will explain myself later, but the fact is, I thought the point of the movie was finally made, but at the end of the movie. And
you didn't care.
Yeah, you know why? I can explain this because it's not a spoiler. Okja is supposed to be a super pig that's created by a multinational company.
Monsanto.
Yeah, something like that. And Tilda Swinton, who is the CEO of the company, wants to, I guess, give a face on this new animal. But we find out this animal was totally created by them. And that's... nonsensical for me, because that's literally a shitty marketing plan from the beginning. So I don't believe in it, because if you give it a name, you will not want to eat it. So I guess the whole movie for me could have been just with a...
You couldn't get past the bad copy.
But that's also the fact that I didn't feel the underlining comment on greed and things like that. And I thought it was finally at the end when the point was made. This movie could have been just as good with a cow, actually.
Well, but see, that's where, like, circling back to what I was saying earlier, I don't think that, you know, like, for instance, my mom probably wouldn't have even wanted to watch it if it were about a cow.
So I'm saying it's just a shame that it's actually a new kind of species, and they didn't thought what a Monsanto-like company could do if they created some kind of a cubicle-shaped animal with a face that was really easy to slice and sell, the reflection on it would have been a little more subtle and less obvious, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, because why would you want to create an animal that's so lovely?
Because animals are lovely.
I disagree completely with you about everything. I think it's going to be a repeat of Rogue One, you know? because here I'm the opposite. I really enjoy the first hour and a half, not so much the ending of the film.
Oh my God.
And I think the point is better made in the first hour and a half than in the end. I really don't agree with you on the things that this is a shitty marketing device, because that's the way that people sell these products in the world right now.
Everything. Like literally everything has a Facebook page.
They always show, you know, for selling bacon or ham. I don't know. We don't really eat bacon in France, not that much. So it's ham here. I think it's the same thing in America, but I can't vouch for it. But you always see, you know, the nice pig running around in the countryside, like it's the way he's made, you know, to feel great about it. It's to associate the great life of the ham on your plate with the life of the pig you saw in the advertisement or on the
Yeah, it's the same thing as buying like grass-fed beef or like, you know, free range chickens, which just means their cage is bigger.
The point for me would have been to comment on the industrial food complex.
But I felt that
this was at the end. And I get it. I totally agree with the fact that the marketing is like that. But
yeah,
you have to be more subtle in your allegory. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's not really only about the food industry. It's about industry at large and how modern companies operate. And it took as an example, you know, the food industry, because it could make a good example since the product is a living thing, you know. But I think that the film nailed the way the companies nowadays do their marketing, because nowadays companies don't want just to sell food, they want to be loved, and it's how they operate, and it's the character of Tilda Swinton in the movie. She want to be loved, and she wants.
I thought she was great too.
I think she was great, and there is a scene where she's hesitant about the whole thing, and
where she sees the footage.
Yeah. And then she talks with all the people in the conference room, and I think it's amazing because it's not, you know, the characters that I expected. She doubts herself. She want to be loved. There is a lot of things like that, and I think it's really great. I don't agree with you, Ariski, because I think it's a great marketing device they use in it to do this fake competition to tell the people look how the pig.
But I know that's the
super pig guy really happy.
I know that's the point that Bong Joon-ho wanted to make. I'm just saying, just pass through me. It didn't call
you
me.
You wish that
into
he had
it.
Been a cube shaped animal that was easily sliced.
And it wouldn't have been, you can't show this animal. You need to show the animal for the people to buy it. They need to love it, you know?
I'm not denying that those things that you're talking about, the themes, the ways the companies are doing their jobs right now. I agree, it's in the movie, but it's too light.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really love the ending, because...
It's not hammered, the end is hammered. That's why I don't like it, and you do, and that's why I like the beginning more.
Because
I wept.
After all the things that happened in this movie, I was like, finally, we have to get into spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
And just one thing, you know, I really think that the rescue attempt of the super pig in Seoul in the first half of the movie, I really think that I think it's the best action scene I've seen since Last Train to Busan, I think.
Including the tunnel scene too, you mean?
Yeah. The whole attempt that is maybe half an hour long, something like that.
Actually, yes, I have to say this scene I enjoyed a lot. I really thought to myself when Mija just tried to get in the Miranda Corporation, I thought, oh yeah, it's going to be finally good, but okay. I'm sorry.
And everything, I think the introduction of the ALF, the light terrorists, I think it's really funny, you know.
Oh man, I love Steve Young too. It's his time.
I think we're just talking too much, definitely, about every scene. Go ahead, out of five. And by the way, I guess you're recommending this movie, obviously.
Yes.
Since you wept in front of it.
I wept. Oh my god, I wept. I'm gonna say 4.5.
Oh my god, that's a great.
It's a great reading.
Yeah, which is actually totally comprehensible if you wept in front of it.
I mean, like, I have a lot of feelings, So
I just love to cry in front of movies. I'm just
sometimes my the lock screen on my phone is Pancake Cat, and sometimes if I'm feeling particularly moved by Pancake Cat, maybe I'll cry a little. I'll send you guys so Pancake Cat so you can see him in all his
really
glory.
Emotional, yeah.
I have a lot of feelings.
I hesitate between 3.5 and 4, but I'm gonna say 4. You know, to oppose you.
Yeah, just totally
that is
reactionary.
Not, I'm sorry, that is not democracy. You have to say your
yeah,
real
yes, it is.
Grade. You have to express yes, yourself and not think about the other. I would.
But
say,
what if part of our no is being reactionary to you?
I'd say something like, "That's going to be harsh," and people will say, 1.5, I think, something like that.
Yeah. And okay, for the listener here. He gave a 3 to Guardian of the Galaxy 2. That's all I needed. And he gave a 5 to Rogue One.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I actually kind of was emotional at the ending of Guardian of the Galaxy 2. All right? Not this one. I'm sorry. But I tend to be harsher, I guess, with the directors that I love, because I do really love Bong Joon-ho, and I just didn't recognize anything to this one. I don't know. Let's dive into spoilers.
I feel like we need to delve into like your childhood and stuff.
I'm definitely in therapy because of Okja, right?
Okja's a symptom.
It's a symptom for my really not well-being. Let's get into spoilers, okay? If you haven't seen the movie and you want to see it, just stop listening, all right? I just want to talk about the ending that I really loved. That's really bizarre, but the scene that where I was, okay, that's the point you have to make, was just when she bought Okja. That's the whole hypocrisy that we have by saying, you know what, I will save just the one that I love. Okay, I'll do a little more, perhaps, by saving a little one that will hide in Okja's mouth. But
I'm going to cry just thinking about it. Oh, it was so sad.
But I'm leaving Mirando, Nancy Mirando, do her bad bit. And that's for me, the scene was like a sum up of everything that had to be said for that, because Nancy Mirando actually just trashed her sister in her dialogues, and that's actually the great sum up for the whole movie, and just needed to show me that, not 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale against capitalism.
Exactly, and that for me, that was the purpose of all that. Like you said, the fact that the companies now want to be loved, so they kind of imagine marketing plans to manipulate you into loving. I guess everything was summed up there in the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
You want to talk about perhaps scenes that you loved? Now I completely trashed your
movie. I want to talk about the ending as well. I agree with you that I like that it ends that way. I mean, she didn't overthrow the company because it wouldn't be believable.
Yeah.
It would be, you know, the little 12-year-old girl like changing the world by yourself. I wouldn't believe in it. So I think it's good. What I didn't enjoy about the end, it was too much foreseeable. I knew they would go to a slaughterhouse. I knew how it would unfold, you know, and so in the first hour and a half, I had a lot of surprises with the film, things I didn't expected, and the end was like a shoo-in ending, so that's why I enjoyed it less, I think. But yeah, I agree that the ending is still quite powerful, but and the same way, you know, I really like the first character Tilda Swinton plays, because she plays two twins, because she was unexpected, but the twin sister is the incarnation of evil in movies, you know. I have seen a character like Nancy Mirando. I hadn't seen a character like Lucy Mirando.
Lucy,
the first one, I think. So in the end, it's like this evil from a James Bond film, and I know that. And that's what
But it's not. It's like this very, like, typically, like, American, like, stiff upper lip, like.
And the fact that they're twins, obviously, is just more powerful because it just says they are the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You cannot see the greed behind the smiley face, but it is here.
Yeah. I love the moment when they're smoking a cigarette and Lucy is smoking a pink cigarette and Nancy is smoking a blue cigarette. So, like, so small, but, like, I have, like, a lot of respect for Bong Joon-ho as a director. I think that, like, a lot of the little, like, characterization details were really beautiful. Like, the braces in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Lucy Mirando had braces in the beginning and she had a little lisp.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I didn't like that orthodontics works. She's rich enough to have Invisalign, so I don't buy it. I'm sorry.
Right, but she's also a dork. Like, the point is that she like never was good enough and she was never cool enough and now she's in power and, like...
Plus, it could have been a marketing ploy to be more lovable because, you know, you have braces, you're kind of vulnerable.
There is something really interesting in this family because she says that she inherited the company from her father who was supposedly a sociopath. That's what she said. Uh-huh. That she was, and I think it really reflects the evolution of companies during the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you take the first big job as a PR in companies was in the beginning of the 20th century after the book by Upton Sinclair, The Jungle
mm-hmm.
came out. He uncovered the truth about canned food factories. In the US and how workers in there often, you know, lost some limbs that ended up in canned food and things like that. After this book, there were some regulation and people needed to hire PR guys, you know, to try to
clean up their messes.
Yeah, and to try to get people to buy
canned foods again. Yeah,
and they discovered that they can't do whatever they want and go away with it. They need a PR job to clean it up, and that's how it works nowadays. And it's not about just the food industry. How the clothes industry try to hide the fact that most of their clothes are made by children somewhere in Bangladesh or something like that, and how you need the two faces of a society, the twin sisters in Okja to operate a company. You need the face, the nice face that will present the products, the face that need to be loved by the people, and the other one that do the dirty job. And I really enjoyed this part of the film. The conversation mm-hmm. in the conference rooms, the way they try to do their job and everything. I think it was really well done.
You know, if you take the duration of those scenes where they mention the father and the sister, etc., versus the time we spend on the fake PR, I think it would have been great if we could have seen perhaps Nancy a little more, or if we could have seen
mm-hmm.
things we haven't seen yet in other movies, because the PR, we're going to clean some guy's mess, we have seen already a lot of movies, and nothing is really new, and we know she will...
Not this way, not with this character, you know?
The fact that they want to use Mija to be on the front line, we did understand this as soon as she tells us. We do not have to see every step of the way. You could have commented a little more, actually, on that, because that's the thing in this movie. It has this comment on the companies, the big companies, and another comment on the food industrial complex. So at one point you have to choose one or the other as a theme you want to explore.
Well, you have to choose an industry, you know, to as a lens. Well, no, as a lens to
because
view
they blend together, you know. It's choose this example to talk about it. So I don't think it's two different things. It's as Charlotte said, he uses one example to talk about this.
He talked about it like in the beginning and at the end, but I don't feel like he really commented on it just during those.
But I think they were all leading up to the end, which like I something that I thought was like the most or the one of the coolest things for me I thought was like how kind of gray the end was. Like for sure it was it, there were certain elements of the ending that were like a little bit saccharine and like happy ending, which didn't bother me, and like they weren't overly sentimental, they were like just sentimental enough. But you know the fact was that you can't, like, you know, the fact is that you cannot, it's impossible to live ethically in a capitalist society. You know, you can't not buy clothes from Bangladesh. There are companies that try to not get their clothes or and materials sourced from you know sweatshops and whatever and or deforestation, and it's just it's next to impossible, you know. And you have like I thought the sort of moral that there you can only do damage control.
That's
was really powerful.
That's the great thing, by the way, because she actually becomes an adult through that, because, you know, you have to realize you have some moral insight on the world, and you have to be a part of it. And that's what happens when she buys Ogja. Mm-hmm. She's like, all right, my hands are dirty now if I make a deal with the Mirando Corp.
You know, you said that there is nothing we can do about it, but actually...
No. I didn't say there's nothing we can do about it, but within the... Yeah.
I agree with you, but the thing is, the example I took in the beginning of the 20th century, we took action to have some more ethical companies, and in the Western world we forbade child labor, we limited the number of hours that workers could work in the factories. So we decided that no, you cannot produce something if it's produced unethically, or you know, we put some fences, you know, to limit the things that you can do with that. And the thing with globalization is we said, but it's okay to do this unethical thing if it happens far, far away. Yeah. But there is something government could do. It's forbid to sell the products that were that didn't follow a certain numbers of rule. Like, if children made it, you can sell it here.
Oh well, and you know how we feel about regulation.
Yeah, I know, but I think we could do something about it. You know?
Yeah, of course we could. Of course we could.
It's just there is no political decision to do it. But it's really an hypocrisy to say it's unethical in France to let a child work to make a product, but it's totally ethical if you do it in Indonesia.
If you buy it at H&M and it's made in Bengal.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say that it's really an hypocrisy in the of the Western society to allow this kind of
thing. Isn't that though what she did by allowing Ogja to take another one? Like she did a little bit. She saved
she tried.
At least she tried. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
But that's the thing. You can only do damage control. You can only.
Yeah.
You do so much within the confines of, you know, an aggressively capitalistic society.
But that's the thing in the numbers. Imagine if, you know, you multiply the Mijas of the world to save little Ogja.
Just one.
Yeah, just one. Mm. If everyone saved just one, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think this film is an example of how to do write a multinationality film. Mm-hmm. I talk about it a lot in this podcast. I'm fed up with Hollywood doing multinational film and everyone speaking English. You know, if you have two Germans talking to each other in an American film, they will talk to each other in English with a German accent.
And it's if you don't ridiculous. Like to read, too bad. It's good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm fed up with that. You know, it's I can't stand it anymore.
And we're the white people of the world.
But by the way, there was something interesting in that, but you know, he kind of brushed it a little bit when you know Steven Yeun, Glenn from The Walking Dead, just mistranslated her, and he got just
completely I love this scene.
Beat up by Paul Dano, and that's the ethical translation. And that's, you could argue that's also some kind of way to say you have to translate whatever point I'm making about industry, companies, etc., into every other countries of the world.
I want to say it's not just about, you know, being realistic in letting people from other nationalities speaking another language in a film. I think it's an amazing, the translation in Okja is an amazing story plot.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses well, and I discovered that there is another layer to it. It's when I don't remember the name of the actor, the Korean American.
Steven Yeun.
Steve Yeun.
Okay, Steven. In the end of the rescue scene, he leaves the truck and he says to Mija, the little girl, he says, "You should really learn to speak English. It really opens some doors." And I discovered that in Korean, that's not what it says.
Oh.
It's a mistranslation. He made it on purpose, because that's what people say to Korean, you know, you should speak English. And you never say to an American, you should speak Korean, you know, to learn.
He
says a joke in Korean.
Yeah. Oh, leaving the van.
I've heard that if you speak Korean in this movie, there will be little jokes that you will understand. But I guess we'll have to learn Korean.
I would love to learn Korean. I think it's such it's such an expressive language.
Yeah.
By the way, you can see the performances talked about Jake Gyllenhaal. They act like Korean actors in Korean movies. You know, it's a little bit overplayed. It's a little bit, you know, and movies are like that.
But
in Korean,
I mean. Think they have fun. I think they have fun with it. It's I had a film watching Okja. You know, I saw a director having fun with his actors, and I really enjoyed that. You could do just that, a film about nothing but about a director, you know, enjoying working with his actors and doing goofy things, and it would be enough for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked his directing style.
Yeah.
Can we talk about...
I don't think I've ever seen Jake Gyllenhaal be that funny.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, I don't, or funny, period. But, like, he just was obviously having the time of his life. And it was hilarious.
Can we talk about the fact that this is a Netflix movie? And I don't know if you have seen other Netflix movies, but can you see a pattern in that? The only pattern I'm seeing is just I do not really like those movies.
what other like, because I know a lot of Netflix content is like Netflix exclusives, but that means that it's just being distributed by Netflix. I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, House of Cards is a Netflix original.
Yeah.
Master of None is a Netflix original series. Yeah, I can't think of a lot of other movies.
Yeah, War Machine. There are War Machine with Brad Pitt.
I didn't see War Machine. Oh yeah. Oh.
Really? He plays that general, you know, that was talked about by the Michael Hastings Rolling Stone article. I don't know if you remember that back in the Afghan War. And it's an okay movie, but it's tried to be like the movie In the Loop that was extremely funny, but just missed some comical things to be super entertaining.
The thing about it being a Netflix movie, I don't know how it was in the United States, but in France, Okja created kind of a scandal. Yeah. For being a Netflix only movie, and for the film not being released in theater, and was some protests from the cinema owner, you know, to try to avoid the film being shown in the Cannes Film Festival, for example. And recently they tried to do some screenings of the film in Paris, and the screening were cancelled by the
Netflix
cinema owner to protest the thing. And
because in France you have to respect the order of media. I think it's supposed to go in theaters first,
yeah,
then in on demand, but a few months later. And in the US, you don't care about that, or actually everywhere in the world.
Well, I don't think it's that we don't care about it.
It's to protect the cinemas that are considered something sacred, yeah. I think, in yeah. France. Or
which is
like
an
that.
Understandable argument, but there are some movies, like, for example, I don't know if they kind of... Manchester by the Sea, for example, was an Amazon movie, and you could download it while it wasn't in theaters. So
yeah, but it's not the Netflix
else.
Policy.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. But I don't.
But you know, I really would have wanted to see the film on the big screen, because I think it's a film that is way better on the big screen. And moreover, I don't think that Bong Joon-ho took into account that the film would be only screened on Netflix, because first, the film is in CinemaScope,
yeah.
which is not a format adapted to your TV. It's more for the big screen. Yeah. So he didn't care at all. Yeah. And yeah, it's too bad.
It was released in theaters here.
Really?
It was? Yeah, it was released. See, it was kind of a paradigm shift here. It was released both in theaters and streaming.
Yeah.
At the same time.
They should have done that in here because I definitely would have seen it in theater. Because I have to say, okay, I might have trashed the movie a little bit, but I think it was the most beautifully shot from Bong Joon-ho. I really loved the cinematography and everything. Mm.
Darius Kongji shot it.
Really? I haven't even read the name. Yeah, okay, well, that's
Darius Kongji
that's
is the cinematographer of Severn or the... he's French. He made Severn, the film by Jean-Pierre Jeunet, the film by Michael Haneke.
You know what? Like that. That's awesome that you say that, because I actually thought, you know what? It looks Finchery a little bit, and that's okay. But cool. Is that the problem for all the Netflix movies? Because the directors will do something for the big screens, but they. They're not sure.
Yeah,
it will
see,
be
it,
screen
I,
on the
I think
screen.
It depends on the it depends on the film. I remember following the release of $1 Million Baby by Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
A journalist asked him why the film was shot so dark,
mm-hmm.
and he said it's because I don't want people to watch it on TV.
Okay,
but that's also really I like. I think it's really elitist to think that everyone can afford to go to the movies here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as expensive in France. But
you said $17 for Ghost in the Shell. I remember that was a ripoff. Definitely.
No, I paid like close to 20. I paid like probably €17.
In France, you can have you can pay €20 a month to see all the films you want in a cinema.
I think there are things like that here. There are subscriptions, maybe to like single theaters, but it's definitely not like that.
Okay.
Here.
So you know, if you can afford $8 a month for a Netflix subscription,
yeah, that's definitely more advantageous. Yeah,
you know, then you can see more movies. You can consume more media, which is what they want.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think they will? I don't know. I try to see some kind of pattern in what movie they want to invest in, but they seem not to care at all. Netflix. They're just like
they're
giving money
a lot.
Yeah, yeah. They will try to see what works.
I think they're developing. Yeah, I think they're doing a lot of experimentation now. I think they're really trying to just develop like new properties.
And
a good way, I guess.
The things that they invest a lot of money in, it's like Okjako. I think it was $50 million, something like that. Uh-huh. They invest a lot of money.
Just something to say. Please bring back puppets, because I cannot stand CGI anymore. I just wanted to see, you know, at one point Jake Gyllenhaal was passing his hand on Okja. I just wanted a real leather something to feel it more real. I don't know. That it doesn't cost a lot. Come on, just puppet this Okja.
Yeah, but would the film had been better if it was more realistic? It's like it's like a Mary Poppins, you know. You accept that there is an animated anime. For me, it was like that.
I might have liked it too if it were a puppet. Practical effects are great.
if you think about the Gremlins, it's still not realistic, and it's a puppet, so, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just a fan of puppets.
Yeah. Bring back, like, Henson-style puppets.
But just for some shots, just like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, you don't need an animatronic all the way, just for some shots when it's mm-hmm. really close.
I want to briefly come back to the film again. I want to talk about the ending a little bit more, because what I was disappointed a little bit about it, I don't know if you've seen, you know... there are some association going undercover in slaughterhouses or in cow factories, and you can see images of that on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it's much, much more horrible and dark than what you see in Hogja. And so I think it was I was bracing myself to see horrible things in it, mm-hmm. and it was not that horrible, yeah. I thought, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, at one point, they're supposed to bring Hogja to a lab, and actually, it's yeah. the slaughterhouse, so I didn't like that neither. I wanted Why? To see a real lab, like, huh. with, I don't know, other attempts at creating an Hogja, and it
they
was
did,
like...
though, that was...
It was really much like a slaughterhouse, you had
paraplegic.
The...
paraplegic... And like yeah. deformed.
That's right.
What he said, it's a lab, but it looks like a slaughterhouse.
It doubles yeah. as a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, that's the,
yeah, yeah.
You don't do GMOs in a slaughterhouse.
Or do you? I don't know. It's Jersey.
Yeah, too much infections on your Hogja. Yeah. Anyway, perhaps I'll rewatch it in a few years. I get back to you when I will be a vegetarian.
Be like 1.75.
Are you trying to negotiate a point?
No. I'm saying maybe in like, oh, yeah. like in 5 years, you're going to be like, you know what, guys? I was pretty harsh. Yeah. Bump it up about a tenth of a point.
I'll probably do that. That's definitely sounds like me.
When you're older and more mellow.
Yeah, I'll be so open to new emotions.
So open.
Do you have something more to say to wrap it up on Hogja? Or did we... I think we did a good job. We talked about everything.
I give us a 3.
We should definitely start that.
It's only fair. Yeah.
So, thank you, everyone. For this amazing podcast.
I just wanted to say, Arno, you know what Mother reminded me of? Mobius.
Yes. Yes. Another Korean film.
I don't know the actual, like, synthesis of that, but it's just, like, fucked up Korean movies. We should do, like, a side series on fucked up Korean movies, or just, like, fucked up movies. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your outro.
There is something actually pretty cool about this, because it's, you know, a small country, and yet, if you say, like, Asian movies, you think about Japan first, and Hong Kong. So it's like a little country between those two great cinematic histories, and yet they have... a feeling to their movies.
But I think it's really different from the rest of East Asian cinema. They have their own thing, you know? It's really different from a Japanese or a Chinese film. Mm. It's not the same feel.
Well, I find a lot of Korean media is, like, super aesthetic and, like, very slick. And, like, even if it's not, like, aesthetic, like, it's always, like, really, really well shot, really... I don't know how to describe it.
No, I totally feel you. Because
except if you watch a Hong Sang-soo film.
Uh-huh.
Well, I would say it's kind of stylized in his minimalist way, because if you take, for example, their TV shows, in Japanese TV shows that are just disgusting to watch. I mean, in the cinematography and in the Korean aesthetics, I totally agree with you, Charlotte. It's always something like really worked.
There's something very like, well, I mean, I guess maybe not about the films, because like we're talking about like super fucked up stuff, but like in a lot of like Korean dramas and stuff, there's like a very like soft, very like sleek, slick kind of aesthetic. And even if like the rest of it is like questionable, like the plots are like...
But is it slick, or is it more American, by the way? I'm just thinking about that, because perhaps... I don't know.
Well, I mean, in the last, like, quarter century, like, Korea's built itself into like a major tech empire. I think that's kind of like the film industry is just like kind of a part of that too. And maybe, I mean, it's like maybe there is something that they've just like co-opted a lot of like the Western aesthetic and done it better.
If they want to sell their products, by the way, to Americans, they have to.
Yeah.
It's really the same thing, you know, about because we talked about it for The Stranger, but the main religion in Korea is Christianism. Mm-hmm. Because of the way they were exposed to Western culture for a long time.
You guys want to go to Korea?
Yeah, I want to go to Korea.
Let's do a fin de séance field trip.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Totally. And let's like let's drink with those Korean directors that are just drunk. Drunk people.
But
like really, there are
verging on stereotypes.
We'll talk about it later. But what's his name, by the way? The alcoholic director that we talked about?
Hong Sang-soo?
Wait, hold on. Can you hear my face palm?
What I wanted to say about Korean cinema, the thing is it's supported by the Korean government, like in France.
God,
the cinema is supported by the government. And I think
we can't have nice things here.
If you want to exist outside of the all-powerful American cinema, you need to do something like that, you know?
Hey, I can't exist in the all-powerful American cinema, so... I would take some government subsidization.
Yes.
I would also take some more coffee.
But perhaps state by state, no? Because we've talked about it a little bit, but do...
New York has a film fund, and I actually just got a scholarship. Thank you very much, Mayor de Blasio, for my master's.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you for film school.
Did you send him to de Blasio?
I don't know. I heard him make a really bad joke about low-income housing once, so I kind of like feel like we're even.
Because every American director interview of indie movies that I've read are talking about the difficulties to make something without any funds, but they have to go to New York or some state that have taxes incentives to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like five states in the whole
Louisiana,
US.
Colorado, I think. Yeah.
So yeah, it's not generalized by federal thing. Well, anyway, whatever.
Yeah, no. Nope. Neither is healthcare, so, you know. Well, what makes you think art would come first?
Yeah, well, France, we have everything, so we're...
God damn it, you have everything.
And you know, the thing is, when the Italian government stopped supporting the local cinema, it fell really hard during the 90s, so it's another example that you need this kind of thing if you want your own cinema.
Yeah.
So, I guess... Listen to us, governments of the world. Give people a check for art.
Give us money.
We want to see films from all over the world.
And from all over the socioeconomic spectrum.
Exactly.
People who can't necessarily afford to finance a film on their own. Not that I'm even from, like, low on that spectrum. There should be poor people making movies. There should be, you know...
To have their stories, by the way.
Accessibility. Yeah, to include more narratives, because that's how we understand each other.
I'm pretty sure we will be heard again. That's the G20 right now, so... Mm-hmm. Obviously, we are going to change the world.
I think we just solved
like
everything.
Like Mija.
Yeah, I think so.
More art, more education.
So we will give ourselves a little pat on the back, you know, for having solved 3.5. All these problems.
So, more art, less pigs, and we'll be okay.
Nice. Nice.
Bye, everyone.
Nice.
Bisous.
Bye.
Bisous.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.